And welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live this week from the new SDPB Black Hills Bureau in downtown Rapid City. We're in the historic Parts Central building, so stop by and say hello. We'll be here all week. And right now with me, Paul Higbee. He's the author of a new book. It's called South Dakota's Cowboy Governor Tom Barry. He joins us now for a look at a time of hunger and suffering and resilience in the state of South Dakota. Paul, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Fascinating book. Where did you decide to take on this topic?
I had met Jan Rasmussen, Tom Barry's niece, probably 5 years ago, and she said, "Boy, you know, my uncle, Governor Tom Barry, would be a great subject for a book." And I agreed because I had tried to find a book about him one time and couldn't. And then History Press approached me a couple years after that and said, "We have an idea for a book for you." Well, I didn't like their idea. But I said, "How about Tom Barry, who was called the Cowboy Governor?" And they looked into his life and they said, "Yeah, let's go that route." And it was because, first of all, being a cowboy governor was intriguing. You know, what is a cowboy governor?
Right.
Then also the period we're talking about, the 1930s, the Depression, the Dust Bowl.
What are some of those early events and sort of how does his time as an actual working rancher, cowboy, really resonate with him and change who he is as a character? So Cowboy Governor is about more than the hat, although the hat is a big deal.
It was, you know, he always assumed, as stock growers to this day assume, you work 7 days a week. Sometimes you're going to have very limited resources, but that doesn't stop you from moving forward. And that's what we needed in the 30s, somebody who was just going to be there every day facing these budgets that, you know, we can't even imagine. Right. How empty the state treasury was, and saying, "Well, that's tough, but we're going to move forward." That was a cowboy mentality, and it was just central to who he was.
What was it being a cowboy like during his youth?
Well, he was one of the original cowboys. I mean, today you can buy the hat, you can love country music, you can drive a big pickup, and people say, "Hey, he's a cowboy." He was one of the original cowboys who came in and rode the open range back in the 1890s in South Dakota. He was born in Nebraska, but he was still a teenager when he came in as a working cowboy. And that's, of course, where the term cowboy comes from. Yeah. You were a boy, literally a boy, doing this big, big job because, you know, in your teen years, you probably had a strong back. You could sit in the saddle all day, and that's what he did. He fell in love with this part of the country and later came here and established a ranch. As far as being a rancher, he would have said, "Well, that's more being a businessman or a stock
different.
Grower.
Yeah.
Yes, I was a cowboy, one of those guys who was out on the open range for days and nights at a time.
I love this image that you talk about in the book about riding tall in the saddle and that being kind of a Hollywood notion and the cowboy saying, "Yeah, you wouldn't be able to sustain that for the 17-hour day that you had." So they rode slumped down?
Yeah, that's what Tom Barry said. And also I think it's a cowboy quoted in there, Lincoln Lang, who said, "You know, you ride in the saddle tall for 17 hours and you won't be able to mount up the next day." So you kind of merge yourself with a horse and slouch.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did he have a notion of, is the notion of being a cowboy a cultural icon at this point? Is it in, the psyche of America as being, unique or?
I think it was just becoming that in the 1920s when Tom Barry went into politics. And a lot of that was because America was fascinated with Will Rogers, the cowboy entertainer who always had witty things to say. And he too was a genuine cowboy, born on the Great Plains the same year as Tom Barry. And so people were saying, "Hey, you know, a cowboy, they're kind of like Will Rogers. They're free-spirited, independent thinkers, always have a funny quip because they sat in the saddle all day dreaming it up." And in fact, everybody who met Tom Barry said, "You really remind us of Will Rogers. Is that conscious? And are you conscious of doing that, of imitating Will Rogers?" And he said, "No, that's just who I am. And I guess it's just who Will Rogers is, too." Yeah. And they later became friends when Tom was governor of South Dakota.
How does he get into politics to begin with?
Well, he believed that under Governor Peter Norbeck and then Governor William McMaster, that they were doing very progressive things in South Dakota, including here in the Black Hills, starting Custer State Park. And just to cite the park as an example, Governor Barry loved that park, but he said the tax structure is such that all the bills are paid for by people in agriculture. And when the 20s came and agriculture was tough economically, he said, we've got to shift the burden. We can't expect farmers and ranchers to shoulder the cost of everything. He was also part of a movement that said South Dakota just needed to, in the 1920s, be more financially astute, realize there are always tough times coming. The 1920s, everybody thought that's when the state of South Dakota would develop the Missouri River with dams and hydroelectricity. And Governor Barry and a group of other Democrats said, no, we just need to get our house in financial order. Mm-hmm. And so that's how he got in, saying we've got to be financially astute. And then later in his career, his symbol, his logo, was an axe. He was always going to axe waste out of state government. And he certainly did that as governor. You know, the first thing he did, first session, was cut the state budget by 25%. But it was because he was in ranching. He said, you know, we farmers and ranchers pay too many of the bills for state government.
And we're not afraid of lean times.
That's right. Yeah.
Let's go back to Custer State Park for a moment. When you say he's sort of instrumental in it, how instrumental are people like Tom Barry into making the park look like what it actually looks like today as far as driving through it at this time? Like, what did it look like in his time? And where are we at in that process of creating something that we would recognize today?
Well, Tom Barry, how he was instrumental in the park was, and this comes right back to him as a rancher, they moved the bison into the park. And he said there's going to be some lean years for those bison. So he would haul hay in from his ranch up by White River every year to help feed the buffalo. Hmm. He was always wary of people who were going to do things that involved livestock, but he thought they didn't really know what they were doing. And when I said it was Governor Norbeck who was instrumental in creation of the park, but Tom Barry and almost everybody out in West River got behind it. And Governor Barry certainly had no problem with the state park. It was just where those tax dollars came from. But he changed it in that he made sure the buffalo had enough to eat and the herd could expand.
A very hands-on sort of personal response to that.
Yeah, and he loved telling people about it all over the country. Yeah. It's like if you're going to take a trip with your family, come to Custer State Park.
So when he gets taken off that board, that's significant for him. Tell us that story.
Yeah, he was on the state board for Custer State Park, and he loved that. He just loved going out there, as you said, being hands-on. And it just felt like a personal insult because he knew he was so well qualified to make decisions about, especially, again, the livestock and the other animals in the park. And it was Governor Green who took him off the board, and it was Governor Green that Barry decided to run against in 1932.
All right, let's talk about his relationship with FDR and sort of what's happening with the Dust Bowl and the Depression and the pre-World War II years during his tenure as governor.
There was a trip he took to Washington, D.C. right after becoming governor, and the first thing he did was go to President Roosevelt and said, this is how bad it is in South Dakota. He had photos taken of drought country and starving cattle, which just really alarmed the president. And he said, okay, what we have in South Dakota is an emergency. We need to come up with some new sort of program and treat it like an emergency. And Governor Barry was afraid. He saw cattle starving in the early years of the drought. And he was really afraid. He mentioned this all the time. He thought people could starve too, because these were farm and ranch families who were absolutely dependent on what they produced. And he was very direct with the president and telling him, we've already had animals die. We're going to have people die too if something isn't done. He got the president's attention, and the two of them really became close friends. In fact, I think sometimes the reason we remember Tom Barry as the cowboy governor is because that's what President Roosevelt always called him. Hmm. Always said, hi, cowboy. and stuff. Hello, Governor Barry. Even after he was out of office, if he saw Governor Barry, he would shout out, "Hello, cowboy."
Interesting. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is author Paul Higbee, and the book we're talking about is South Dakota's Cowboy Governor Tom Barry, with a really fun cover. We'll put a picture of that of him on his horse there. Let's talk about his wife a little bit and family life and sort of what kind of support does he need at home to really go to peer, because it's a every other year session at this point as a lawmaker and then as governor. So what's his personal life like?
Well, Rena Barry, his wife, had a background similar to Tom Barry's. You know, they both grew up on farms in Nebraska. And like Tom, she thought she could handle any livestock, plant any crop. She was just a strong farm woman. And she was also a teacher. She taught their own children and sometimes other children in the area west of White River. I owe a great debt to her because she's the one who really collected his papers, his letters, news clippings, and put them in this scrapbook, organized very nicely, that I could go through and write this book. So, you know, Rena Barry died when I was 10 years old. I never met her, but I sure felt like I had a partner in writing this book because of her organization. And she collected everything, his speeches, letters he got from President Roosevelt, good articles that were negative, and so it was just a great find.
Was that unusual for a spouse or someone from that time to really save all of that, or was that pretty much, you know, what you would do? And it's how rare is it for it to have been preserved in the way that it was for you?
I think it was pretty common. I've talked to other writers who have stumbled across that too. And you think about it, it was the only way to preserve those documents was to, you know, put them in a scrapbook, as before we could put things online and digitize them.
Right.
And that's what she did. And they put it in a cardboard box and it's preserved. Yeah.
Give me an idea of there's a lot of money and financing and debt reduction and how things are going to be funded. His governorship is that's a pretty intense conversation and an argument often about how the money works. What gave him the background to really deal with, you know, financing on that level, to go to Washington, have the negotiations that he needed to have? Where'd that come from?
That was something that was really interesting to me, because all throughout his writings and his speeches, he talked about how much he hated debt and would not allow his ranch to be in a debt situation. And you look at the records, and that's true. And he instilled that in his sons and daughters, too. And yet, when he got to Pierre, he was such an astute businessman, he had to deal with debt sometimes. And he could handle it. I mean, he could negotiate a good rate. An example is his very first few weeks, he had to negotiate with a federal agency to get a loan to reduce the interest that South Dakota was paying on a program called the Rural Credits Program, which farmers had borrowed money and then they were unable to pay the money back when the Depression came along. And, you know, you read the accounts of what he did. He went to Minneapolis to meet with these federal officials. He had the deal done in just a matter of a few days. And it's like, that was masterful negotiating. And it saved South Dakota millions of dollars over the years.
What lessons do you see, you know, as we go through 2017 and the drought problems that we've had this year, the problems that we have this year with the ag economy? Is there a message from that time for South Dakotans today, either in Pierre or, you know, stock growers?
Yeah, it's that South Dakota can get through anything. And we really owe the people from Tom Barry's generation a great debt. Because part of what came out of the Depression and the Dust Bowl was rebuilding the land with stock dams, shelter belts, you know, things that we see and maybe kind of take for granted. It's just always a part of the South Dakota landscape. No, that came out of learning the lessons of that drought and that Dust Bowl. And but when Tom Barry died in 1951, a lot of people commented and they said, you know, the main thing about Tom Barry is he told us we can get through anything as a state. And we lost some residents, you know, but the ones who stayed, boy, they prospered. They figured out how to do it, and so that's just part of being a South Dakotan, I think.
Part of being a South Dakotan. Read the book. It's South Dakota's Cowboy Governor, Tom Barry. We're just scratching the surface of that. Paul Higbee is the author. Any book signings or places where the book can be found that you want to share with us?
Yeah, it's found in a lot of stores across the state. I've done book signings last month in Sioux Falls, Pier. Zambros in Sioux Falls sells a lot. Prairie Pages, the High Plains Western Heritage Museum up in Spearfish. And then I'll be at the Festival of the Book in September in Deadwood.
I'll be there too. We're broadcasting live for 2 hours on September 22nd from the Deadwood Mountain Grand. That's at the South Dakota Festival of Books. Come see Paul Higbee. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.